conflict resolution for families. The fact that you're even sitting in this workshop is hard, isn't it? That you have to say, I need to come learn about this, because conflict is never fun. As someone who was raised in a home that had lots of conflict, lots of unresolved conflict, I decided at some point in my life I just really didn't want that anymore and found ways to get rid of it. And I hope to share with you today some of the things that I learned that you can use so you can avoid some of the conflict and the frustration that I experienced in my life. So it's going to be a kind of an open and exposed workshop, and I'll try not to cry, so we'll see how that works. Let's move on. Let's see. Oh, we have a... How's if I do this? Put this back in here. All right. There we go. As Neil said, my wife and I run Family Experience Ministries. Our mission is to equip families, especially parents, with tools for knowing, loving, and leading their families. Parenting is a career for which we receive no training. So it's as much as we can. We want to become a student of our students, and that's our focus, is to help parents with those tools. In today's workshop, I want to talk about some universal fears, because everybody has fears, and they're a large component to conflict. Two steps for lowering tension. Who would like to learn those two steps? Come on, everybody has to raise their hand or I can't do this. The green light gate. It's a green light. What's a green light for? Move forward. What's the gate for? Stopping. When you encounter the gate, you can't go forward until you see that light turns green. So we're going to see what that green light gate is. And then how to reach a next step. Conflict is a very interesting phenomenon of the human condition. So you all have had experience with conflict at one time or another? Yes, or you wouldn't be here. So you're sitting next to somebody that you might know or not know. Doesn't matter. You probably have a story about conflict that was really frustrating. And so I'm going to give you an assignment. Find a partner, and you got 45 seconds to tell your story. And then I'm going to say, okay, now switch. And then the other person has 45 seconds to tell their story about the conflict in your life that was very frustrating to you, some kind of disagreement, argument, whatever, and why it was that. You got 45 seconds. Ready? Go. And switch. Now switch. The other person tells their conflict story. And wrap. Okay, so I want to hear a little bit about some conflict. Who feels brave enough to give us a synopsis? What was the tragic conflict, frustrating conflict that you experienced? Anybody? Parenting? Well, give me an example of that. What happens in parenting that's frustrating? Difference of opinion. How many had that as the theme of their conflict? Difference of opinion. Okay. Anybody else want to share? Yes.
So my husband and I left at lunch to go get the kids because they were at VBS. And I moved the truck and it freaked him out because he thought the truck got stolen.
Which resulted in a verbal disagreement?
Yes. Definitely. I was being thoughtful and he couldn't see that. And efficient.
Okay. You're being efficient and thoughtful, and he freaked out that the truck was stolen, and he saw some sort of desire or need to express that frustration to you. So let me guess, it kind of went like this, and you responded like this, and then he kind of responded like that, and the volume probably went up. And does anybody's conflict resemble that? No, never, right? I call those yabbit trails. Yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. It's conflict. Most of the time, conflict occurs with fear. And I think that there are some universal fears that we have. What I mean by that is everybody has them because they are as a result of sin in life. First is the fear of criticism. We're afraid of being criticized. Right? Think about that. How about fear of failure? We're afraid to do something. We're afraid that we're going to be viewed as a failure. Someone's going to view us as a failure. We're afraid of rejection, that you won't want me, that you're going to think less of me. These are the fears that are, I think, at the root of a lot of conflict. And they are rooted in Genesis 3, because there is no mention of fear until they ate of the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil that they were told not to eat. And God came to look for them. And they hid because they were afraid. There was no fear prior to that. I know different Christians have different levels of spirituality and different levels of spiritual experiences. So I know my crowd here may think I'm out to lunch. This has happened to me once in my life, and it hasn't happened since. It didn't happen before. I play bass guitar on a worship team. And I was playing bass on a Sunday night at this church that I attended, and we're playing beautiful worship songs. And the pastor stands up and he comes to the podium and he says, "I'm having a vision of a door. Does anybody have an interpretation?" He had never done this before. He'd never gotten up to the podium and said that he's having a vision of any kind. This wasn't a church that did visions every 5 minutes. It was this vision is one, and this is kind of weird. And I'm standing there with my bass guitar in my hand. And the next thing I know, I'm standing in a room that is dark, and fear is filling the room, so tangible that I can touch it. And I can't see him, but I know God is back here to my right behind me, and I know that Satan is back here to my left, and there's a door that I can't see, but I know is in front of me. And fear is filling the room, and I'm frozen in fear, and the Lord said to me, "Go through the door. The fear is a lie. Go through the door," he repeated again. "The fear is a lie." And the next thing I know, I'm standing back on the stage with the bass guitar in my hand, with the pastor saying, "Does anybody have an interpretation?" And this has never happened to me before nor since. And I'm like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And so I kind of raise my hand and I go, and I told the pastor what I just told you. And the pastor says, does this mean anything to anybody? And nobody said anything. Well, it just so happened I was single at the time, and I had invited this lady from work to church, and she was sitting in the audience. And after I got done playing my bass guitar, I went down and I sat next to her, and she was making notes, and I was nosy, and I read her note as she was writing about a dream that she had had over and over and over since she was a child to go through a door, and that she was too afraid to do it. And I was able to witness to her that night and bring her and saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. With that dream, I am convinced, if nothing else, that fear is a lie. It's sent from Satan. It's not part of God's intention for us. It is cast upon us, and fear gets into, Satan wants nothing more than to get in the way of our relationships and how we worship God and how we have fellowship and relationship with each other. So when I say that fear, these fears, I mean, when you take Adam and Eve in the garden, they feared God's criticism. We know we weren't supposed to eat the apple. Or he's going to think that, gosh, we're failures. Or he's going to reject us. I mean, all of these, by the way, are fear of loss. There's some sense of loss in all of that. And so I start this presentation on conflict resolution just to talk about empathy and compassion, not only for yourself, but for those that you're arguing with. The golden rule says to treat people the way you want to be treated, right? When you're afraid, do you like people to harp on you? Do you want people to tell you that you're a fraidy cat or that you're scared or that you shouldn't be or whatever? No, you want to feel safe. You want to feel okay. And so I want to just say, when you have a conflict, know that fear is in the root. And I look at my job as a parent and as a husband to provide an emotionally safe environment for my wife and my daughter. That's a huge job for me as a dad, is to provide an emotionally safe environment so that they don't feel afraid. So, okay, that sounds great, Daniel. How do you do that? Here's some techniques that I learned from my mentor 25, 30 years ago. And I've been able to polish them and be able to systematize it a little bit so I can teach it. But this is a five-step model that my clients in the business world, I teach them this for conflict resolution all the time. One of my clients called it the relationship ladder. I love it, so I trademarked it. So focus on the other person. Seek to learn if you understand. Look for trust. Gently discover the truth. Establish hope. Let's talk about how this is biblical. In the Old Testament, you have the nation of Israel, right? They were formed in tribulation in Egypt. And they were under severe pressure from the Egyptians. And what happened? This is love, faith, truth, hope, fellowship. Love, they learned of God's love. The guy, they believed God loved them. And they were told, Moses was sent to tell them, I've heard your cries. I love you. I'm going to bring you out. And they placed their faith in that message, yes? And they came out. And then there was the truth. He took them out to the desert and said, this is the law that I'm going to give you. These are the rules you're going to live by. And I'm going to take you to the promised land where you're going to live, and I'm going to be your God, and you'll be my people. In a basic five-step process, you can keep it on your hand, right? Love, faith, truth, hope, fellowship. I love you, God says. Place your faith in that. Love, faith, truth. Here's the truth of our relationship, how it's going to lay out. Here's the hope. I'm going to give you the promised land, and you're going to be my people, and we're going to have a relationship. New Testament, us today, we learn about God's love, right? We place our faith, our trust in that, and he gives us the truth this is, we're a sinful person and we need salvation, and this is the law that we're supposed to live by, obey God, love God, the greatest commandment to love. There's grace all over that. And the hope of eternal life with him if we do those things, and the fellowship eternal with God. Love, faith, truth, hope, fellowship. So I can't teach that in the business world. They don't let me. Those alphabet companies that I can't mention on tape here that hire me, I can't go in and teach biblical things. Yes, I can. I just can't call it biblical things. So I gave it this nice secular terminology, right? Focus on the other person. Love them. Let me just focus on you. And Chris, can I just use you as my since you're front row here, can I use you? So let me just focus on you, Chris. Let me just love you. I want to love you. Love faith. And I'm going to get that faith in there, that you're going to see that I love you, and you're going to place some faith in this. Hope, as I listen to you, and you're starting to see the hope, and we answer love, faith, truth. We get to the truth, then we get to the hope, and then we're going to have fellowship. That's how it's going to work out. So that's the model. Let's start with the very first two steps. These are the two steps that you need to know to reduce tension. One, focus on the other person, not your needs. I know that when you're in a conflict, you want your needs met. Let's translate that. You're afraid that your needs aren't going to get met. I know, because that's how I was for a long time, and still get. But focusing on the other person is an act of love, and it's giving them the safe emotional place, because you do it without criticism. Step two is to seek to learn if you've understood what you've been focusing on. The first step is non-speaking. It's just focusing. For those of you familiar with Myers-Briggs, there's the thinker-feeler scale, how we process information. Some people think, right? They process cognitively. It's a thinking way of processing. Some people feel. It's a feeling, emotional way of processing. So focus on what their person is thinking or feeling, because maybe you don't know if they're a thinker or a feeler, right? So what are they thinking? What are they feeling? And if you had this conflict with the truck, what is the person thinking or feeling? That he lost his truck. He is concerned that his truck was stolen, which would be terrifying. Because if he's like any man, he loves his truck, right? And there's no full coverage, so there's more fear of loss, right? So there's all these fears involved. So our job is to create the safe emotional environment. And what is he thinking or feeling? Now, I'm not going to call the fear, by the way. I don't suggest, oh, you're afraid of this. No, don't do that. Don't tell people they're afraid. They don't want to, just like you don't want to be told you're afraid, don't tell them that they're afraid. It's okay to be afraid, because we are fallen creatures, but we don't need to be reminded of that. So focus on, so a better, safer word is concerned. So you're concerned that your truck was missing. First step, right? I will guarantee you that if you had said, oh, you must have been so concerned that your truck was missing, that the tension would have been, yes. Just acknowledging where they're at emotionally is being understood, and it's like air. Here's the dangers. Never use these phrases. I understand. Or, I know how you feel. Because guess what? You don't. You don't understand, and you don't know how they feel. You're not inside their body. You're not inside their spirit. A friend of mine lost his dad, and his neighbor, who had also lost his dad previously, said, oh, yeah, I know how you feel. Man, gosh, it's hard. My dad died a couple years ago. And the guy stopped and says, no, you don't know how I feel. Because the guy has no idea what kind of relationship the man had with his dad. So to say, I understand, or I know how you feel, violates a couple of rules. First of all, who's the focus on? It's on you, right? I understand how you feel. I know how you feel. No, it's not. It's not focusing on the other person. So to focus on them means you sound really concerned that your truck was missing. Oh, gosh. Because he's afraid. Yes. I'm terrified. It's like air. People want to be understood. They want people to know how they're thinking, what they're feeling, and that it's okay to think or feel that way. My mother was horrible at that because she was a thinker on the Myers-Briggs scale, and I lead feeler, okay, in case you can't tell. So she would always tell me, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, you shouldn't feel that way. Guess what? I do. Now, statistically, 75% of the population are thinkers and 25% are feelers. So that means the majority of this room, 3/4 of you are probably thinkers and 1/4 of you are feelers. You got to let the feelers feel. They may seem over-emotional, illogical, and weak, but that's how they process. That's how God wired them to process. And they can't not process that way. You can't expect a feeler to process it all cognitively and non-emotionally. They have to do it. I'm living proof. Conversely, feelers, to the feelers in the room, the cognitive people, they may not emote it as much as you do, but they're still frustrated. They're still upset, and all the more reason to focus on their thoughts or feelings and help them feel or believe that they are safe. Maybe the word feel doesn't resonate with a thinker. You have to believe that you're safe. So creating that safe environment is the ultimate importance. It's like air, all right? Now, Steve, how tall are you? Stand up for a second. 6'3", perfect, come on up here. Being understood is like air. And when you don't feel understood, you fight to be understood. Let's take Rosanna's husband. He wasn't feeling or believing that he was understood about his frustration and his fears with his truck. She did something very logically and thoughtful for him, she thought, from her perspective. He didn't see it that way at first, and so he was afraid, and he wanted to know that it was okay to be that way. Okay, thanks for letting me use that. So it's kind of like air. As long as you're not being understood, you're fighting for air. That's the equivalent. Air is the equivalent of being understood. So what I want you to do is go ahead and put your hands around my neck. And I want you to start squeezing the esophagus and cutting off my air supply. Believe me, I'll be okay. I've taken Taekwondo and I can survive this. I notice my face is turning a little red. And my voice is starting to cut off a little bit, right? And if he keeps doing this, keep going. Tighter. Come on. And if he keeps doing this, eventually I'm going to break free and fight to get air. Okay, give him a hand. Thank you very much. When you don't get air, you fight. I grew up in Chicago. The guy across the street from me, a little older than me, him and I one day got into it, and he got me on the ground. He was the same ratio, Steve, like he was taller than me. He got his arm around my neck, and he cut off my air supply. There was zero air going in or out of my lungs for about 15 seconds. Now, I don't know about you, I desperately wanted to live. Somewhere I became the Incredible Hulk. And I threw that guy about 10 feet, and everybody standing around going, fight, 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 was like, whoa. But I wanted my air, and I was going to fight to get it. In the same way, when we are having a disagreement with somebody and the tensions are starting to do this, it's because we're not being understood. We're not getting our air. and we're following the yeah, but trails. Yeah, but this, yeah, but this, yeah, but this, yeah, but this, and the voice is getting louder as if somehow if we talk louder, we're going to be understood. Doesn't work, because understanding and volume makes no difference, right? Just stand outside of the concert hall when, you know, the rock concert is playing. You can't understand a word they're saying. There's lots of volume, but you can't understand any of it. Volume and understanding are two different things. So the idea is to know that and to seek to understand somebody. And you do that by asking yourself the question, what are they thinking or feeling? And then step two is to see if you understood that correctly. Sounds like you're concerned that, sounds like you were concerned that the truck got moved and you were concerned it got stolen. Notice there's no personal attack on your husband there. Sounds like you were concerned that you didn't get this promotion. Sounds like you're frustrated about that. Sounds like you're this. You know what? Canned phrase, but it works. Sounds like you were concerned. Sounds like you were upset about. Sounds like, and it could be the other way. Sounds like you were thrilled about something. Let me give you a little example. Wife, and I'll be stereotypical in this example. Wife standing at the sink, doing the dishes, and she's doing the dishes, and the husband walks in from work. Hey, honey, how's your day? And the wife goes, and she breaks, and she goes, it was horrible. And Phyllis said this, and Laura said this, and it just blew out of proportion, and this got crazy. And the husband goes, oh, well, honey, what you needed to do was this. And she says, would you just listen to me? And he says, I am listening to you. No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. Yes, I am. How else would I have known what to tell you what to do if I hadn't been listening? He wasn't concerned about her thoughts or feelings. He had actually jumped three steps up the ladder. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't want to get on a ladder if the first three rungs are missing. Not safe. It's kind of a quick invitation to sleep on the couch. So here's a different way to do it. Oh, honey. Oh, that's horrible. Because it was to her. Does he know what she should have done? Yeah. Does she know what she should have done? Yeah. Does she need him to tell it? No. She is afraid of his criticism. She's afraid he's going to see her as a failure. She's afraid he might reject her as a worthy spouse. Fear of loss, all of. She's afraid of all of that. Now, I just use the stereotypical sexist example. You want to flip that around? We can flip that around real easy because it works both ways, and I can give you hundreds of examples. But you get the idea. We have to provide that safe environment that it's okay to be thinking or feeling whatever it is that you're thinking or feeling, whatever your concerns are. Oh, that sounds horrible. Yes, it was. And then she breathes a little easier. Yes. And maybe she vents a little more. Oh, honey, that was terrible. Oh. Empathize, right? Weep with those who weep. Rejoice with those who rejoice. It's kind of scriptural, yeah? Okay. Here's what not to do. Not listening skills. These are the seven deadly sins of not listening. Filtering is one of them. Sifting through her words or his words, or only tuning in when you find an agreement. By the way, there are times to do these things. I should clarify this up front. There are times to do these things, and it's okay. When there's not conflict, if you have a relationship and there's lots of synergy going on, some of these things can be okay to do. But when there's conflict and there's disagreement between somebody, between two people, these are listening sins to avoid. So filtering through their words and looking for the areas of agreement, or second-guessing, trying to guess someone's motives. Oh, so you were just wanting to do this, or you were trying to do this. Whoa. Whoa. Uh-oh. I need somebody's help. Neil, can I ask for some help? Can I ask you to go to booth 608 and get my power cord? Thank you. Uh-oh. We'll restart it. We'll come back to the listening sins in a bit, because I forget them off the top of my head. Let me continue on with the gate, all right? That green light gate I told you about? The green light gate, after you have listened well, and you haven't sinned and you're listening, and you're ready, you want to move on, notice how the guy wanted to fix it. What you needed to do was this. There's a gate. There's a green light. Don't, guys, gals, doesn't matter. Don't try to fix it until you got the green light. There's a gate in front of you, and you shouldn't go into the fix area until you've got a green light. And even how you fix makes a big difference. So step number three. First one is focus on the other person. Second one is seek if you've understood. Step three is that gate. Look for trust. Look for trust. Now, what does trust look like? Because the verb, the action, is look. Look for trust. What does trust look like in a disagreement? Usually it's the voice dropping in intensity, or the breath kind of, they've got their air, or they go, oh, yeah. There's some sort of visual cue that they're trusting. They're not going to tell you, oh, gee, I thank you for listening to me and I suddenly trust you now. You have to look. So if we go back to the example, she's doing the dishes and he says, oh, that must have been horrible. Yeah, it was. Now she's feeling safer. Her voice tone has dropped a little bit. She's breathing. Her shoulders might relax a little bit. This goes both ways. The guys can do the same thing. This, I can, as a feeler, I sometimes get a little, you know, emotional about something. And I might not even, it might not even be with my wife, but I'm just upset about something. There's a conflict in my life, and my wife's trying to help me. Thank you so much, sir. Maybe you can find the cord and plug that puppy in. And she has learned with this ladder just to acknowledge, thank you, sir, to acknowledge my feelings. You seem very frustrated about that. You seem upset about that. Okay, yeah, I am. I just want to know it's okay to be frustrated, right? I don't want to be told that I shouldn't feel a certain way. So, especially with feelers, you want to do that. All right, let's try to do this again. Oh. Hello, computer. There we go. Ta-da! Thank you, Neil. Let's give Neil a hand. Saved. All right, so what? Quick quiz question. What is step three? Look for trust. That's your green light gate. Okay. Let's jump back, now that we have our computer back, to do the seven deadly sins of not listening. So second guessing. Guessing somebody's hidden motives. Oh, you're just trying to do this. Boy, I had someone pull that on me one time. I was frustrated. Well, you're feeling this. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. Yes, you are. Because this. It's like, first of all, you're not making me feel safe, right? Second of all, no, that's not me. So some people can tend to project their motives on other people. Don't do that. Don't project your motives on other people. Just because you might have that motive in a situation or you know somebody who might, doesn't mean that they do. In the same way that you don't know how they feel or what they're thinking, you just have to, it's kind of an inquisitive thing. Sounds like you're concerned about something. Discounting. Dangerous. When you lack respect for somebody, you might discount them just because of who they are. Or maybe they're a bad speaker. So you discount what they're saying just because they don't talk well. That's a listening sin. Relating. Someone's talking, and all you can do is find a way to relate to them and not move forward with something. That's a listening sin. Rehearsing. Just waiting for them to stop talking so you can talk. Don't raise your hands. Forecasting. Running ahead of the speaker's idea while you stop listening to what's going on can be a listening sin. Placating, agreeing with everything just to avoid conflict. I have a relative who does this. Doesn't matter what you say, this relative will go, oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. And then 5 minutes later, you can say something exact opposite. And, oh yeah, yeah, I see that. Just avoiding conflict altogether. A listening sin, don't do it. All right, so the first two steps are your active listening. When you hear people describe active listening, these, to me, are the first two steps. That seek, focus on the other person and seek to learn if you understood. Then the green light gate is to look for trust. To look for trust. I was, right after I got out of the Navy, I was in San Diego, and I was talking to my neighbor, and she was expressing this frustration. She had just married this guy who lived next door to me. And he was kind of a universalist churchgoer kind of guy, and not a real Christian, but he went to a universalist, pantheistic type church. And she did not really realize that about him, I guess, when they got married. But she's standing outside, and we're talking, and she goes, yeah, this went to Easter service, and all they did was just talk about the fundraising for the new building project and this and all these other things. But here it is, Easter, and they didn't even talk about Jesus. And she's just going on. And so I said, you sound really frustrated. Because she was. And her eyes, she went, yes. And her eyes got really big. Yes, I'm frustrated. And you could see the trust, right? You could see that she felt heard. She believed she was heard. And at that point, then, it was kind of like a green light gate that I could, and I'm not going to rush this, by the way, but I'm not going to move forward until I see that, yes, she's heard. If I were to just try to fix it and say, well, have you thought about going to a real Christian church? Wouldn't have got very far. You've heard the phrase, perhaps, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. The way to show them that you care is to genuinely hear them, what their thoughts and feelings are, and let them know it's okay. You know, Kelly over here might be telling me she just read this awesome article that the moon is made out of blue cheese, right? And she's convinced because it was some science magazine that she read it in, and she is convinced the moon is made out of blue cheese. I have some choices here. I could say, Kelly, you're nuts. Right? Is that going to get me very far with Kelly? No. Wow, you sound very convinced about this. Where did you learn this? And how did you tell me more about this? I don't have to criticize her when I disagree with her. I can provide a safe place for her to talk without condemnation. Right? And that's what we're talking about in those first two steps, to get to that third step. Because until she trusts me, we can't move on to the next step, which is how to reach a next step. Gently discover the truth. Gently discover the truth. The adverb here is gently, because we can discover the truth in a not so gentle way. What you need to do is this. That's kind of not so gentle. Here is a more gentle way to do it. She's talking about Phyllis and Laura and this disagreement and, oh, so frustrating. And, yeah, gosh, that was horrible. Oh, my gosh, you must have felt terrible. Yes, I did. And she finally calms down and relaxes. And she takes that breath, which is my green light gate. She's feeling safe now. The fears are minimized. Now he can move on to the next step. And I always like to use it with a question, if possible, instead of a statement. The question is, what do you think really happened there? Remember, she knows, right? You might know, but she might know too. So let's just trust her to do that. What do you think really happened here? Well, I probably shouldn't have said this, and Phyllis probably shouldn't have said that, and she's been playing it all afternoon in her head 500 times over. She knows. What do you think really happened there? Gently discover the truth. Oh, sounds like it, yeah, well, yeah. I don't have to have all the answers, right? I just need to provide a safe place. So that great next question is, well, step number 5 is establish hope. What do you want to do about it? What do you think you ought to do? Now I'm moving forward. Here's the key, folks. Everything, steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, is the present or the past. It has nothing to do with the future. We are in such this move, fix it now, move forward society. And you cannot be efficient with people. You have to be effective with people. Efficiency and effectiveness are two very different things. We need to be effective with people, which means not efficient. Let's just say that you guys, as an example, understanding the difference, let's say that you guys are firefighters. Okay, we're at a convention here of firefighters in Colorado, and there is a fire, as we're sitting here in class, a fire breaks out in this wall over here, and I'm doing the instruction. I say, hey, class, you're my best firefighters in Colorado. Get that fire out. And so you run out to the truck, and you grab all the equipment in record time, and you come back in here in record time. You get everything set. You charge the hoses, and you got these tiles off over here, and you're putting water in the wall over here in record time. Were you efficient? Yes. Were you effective? No. The fire is over here. So you can be efficient and not effective, right? You want to be effective. You know, when your teenage daughter comes to you with a problem and you see the solution and you just, well, what you need to do, honey, is this, because you're just in firefighting mode. The last thing to do is to say, what you need to do is this. Oh, honey, that sounds frustrating, because she's frustrated. Provide that safe environment. Be effective with it, not efficient with it. Everything up there is the past. First couple steps, all the past. After she feels safe and she feels heard and she feels listened to, then I can say, what do you want to do about it? Have you given some thought about that? That, after everything else, is establishing the hope, moving forward. And I like to do it with questions. Let them own their own solutions. Is this helping? I challenge you. This is my charge for you guys. As you go out throughout your lives from here on forward, but starting today, practice steps 1 and 2 as much as you can. You'll be amazed at the difference. Even go to the gas station every day that you stop at for coffee or something like that, you know, and you talk to the cashier, you know, oh, that must have been frustrating. That sounds like you had a great time. Well, just focus on them and see if you understood what they were talking about. Right? I do this to my business clients all the time. I give the assignment, go practice this with your spouse and your kids and come back and tell me how it works. We meet once a month for these management classes. And I had this one guy, 60 years old, come back and he says, my wife said to me after the third night of me doing this, she says, who are you and what did you do with my husband? Because she felt heard for the first time in decades. I have another client. She was an HR assistant. She came to me and said, I went home to pick up my kids from school and drive home, and they were driving home, and I'm looking in the backyard, in the back seat, and through the rearview mirror, and they're talking. And I normally just nod my head and go, yeah, uh-huh, oh, wow, mm-hmm, yep. And I put this into practice. Oh, honey, that must have been great. Or, oh, wow, honey, that must have been horrible, because they were telling her about their day at school. And she said she looked in the rearview mirror, and her 5-year-old's eyes were like, Mom is really listening. She's really hearing me. At 5, the kids know the difference. It's amazing. So my charge to you, my challenge to you is to focus on the person and to start practicing affirming what they're saying, whether it's positive or hurtful, and try to make them feel safe in that. The other steps will come pretty naturally. Now, if you want some practice with this, we have some books on understanding people, different styles, like to be talked to in different ways. behavioral styles like D's, core D's, drivers types, they could just plow through a nitroglycerin factory and not be bothered. But S's and C's don't like a whole lot of conflict. S's especially, and that's a huge part of the population. How we talk to people, very different. The DISC assessments can help with that. And if you want the master's degree level, we got the reference manual on DISC. If you want to study this stuff a little more, the conflict resolution, the five steps are spilled out. This is my business book, Creating Passion-Driven Teams. So if you're in business, it's a good book. If you're in ministry and have a ministry team, it's a great book. It's not overtly Christian, but I have a very strong Christian worldview, so everything in here is from the Christian worldview. Chapters 10 and 11 are specifically the relationship ladder. Chapter 10 is listen or this won't work. Chapter 11 is resolve to resolve all conflict. But chapter 10 is the listening skills. Chapter 11 is the conflict res portion. So those are available at our booth. And if you have any questions about any of this stuff, I would encourage you to ask me because I'm here and I'm free. Question?
Yeah, how is it sounds like from I understand? Sounds like you proceed to the back door, I understand.
To say I understand, the focus is on me. It's saying I understand. To say sounds like you feel this or sounds like you're concerned about this is focused on the other person. Does that help? And if you want to try it on people, try it. Actually, set up the experiment and try it that way. Question, yes? The question is, I have two kids that fight a fair amount, and if I want to change that, can I walk them through this? The answer is yes. I did the training one time, and there was so much conflict in the office, I actually practiced this with the team for the whole morning. I said, so, okay, you feel, you're saying this. Go ahead and say that. And they say what they want to say. And then you turn to the other kid and say, okay, now what did he just say? He said this. And then you say, now, did he say that correctly? Did he nail that? No, he didn't get all of it. So say it again. What are you saying? Okay, now what did he say? And paraphrase it. He said this. Okay, now did he say it correctly the way you perceive it? Yes. Okay, so now you have any response to that? And they get to respond. And then I turn to that person and say, now what did he just say? And did he say that correctly? Okay, so now did you have a response to that? And I go back that way. I basically facilitate the five-step process. Respectfully, and I control the conversation. What did he just say? He just said this. And then I turn back, is that capture what you said? If not, then I say repeat it and make him do it again. It can't be efficient. It took me 3 hours to get this team to talk to each other. We broke for lunch. The guy who heads the team, who hired me to come in to work with his team, him and I were walking into the lunchroom, and everybody was sitting at the same table. He stopped in his tracks, and I'm like, what? He goes, I've never seen that before. I said, what? He goes, they're all sitting at the same table having lunch. They all felt heard. They felt safe again. So it all about being understood. Yes?
Okay. Your second ladder step, I think, is
see if you understood, yes.
But once we perceive that we understand, we shouldn't tell them that we understand.
Mm-mm.
We don't understand.
If I tell you, sounds like you feel, the question is, should I tell them that I understand? They're going to know. Sounds like you feel like I might be a little unclear about my second step. Is that right?
Maybe.
So now I don't need to say, I understand. Because you understand now that I understand.
Okay.
Yes, question in the back. So it sounds so. The question is, maybe the child wants to wear a bikini, and you say no, and so she's starting to get tension.
Yeah. So at the end of it, I'm understanding.
Okay, so it sounds like you're concerned that you want to wear a bikini and I'm not letting you. And this is frustrating you? Okay. So do I understand you correctly? Okay, so as long as there's no tension beyond that, there's no huffy-puffy and elbows back and yelling, I have a green light gate to move forward. So what do you think leads me to say no bikinis? I can ask the question and engage the conversation. I'm still on the present. I'm not in the fix-it mode. I'm just at the present still. What do you think leads me to say no bikinis? Zip my mouth shut and wait for an answer. By the way, it's like in sales, and feel free to ask me more about that. Is how much time do I have left? Am I done? I have 3 minutes left. It's kind of like asking the question and waiting for a response, right? What leads you to think that I would say no to a bikini? Because you want them to understand you, right? They have to understand each other. So she's going to tell you and say, well, I don't know. Maybe that's not it. Maybe that's it. You can do yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. Let me give you one more example. I was doing yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but with somebody one time, and it was getting really loud. Yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. And I realized there was a whole lot of yeah, buts going on, and I did the face palm. I go, Bobinski, you teach this stuff. So I took my perspective, and I tied it onto a little imaginary dog leash, and I let the little dog run behind me because I didn't want my perspective to run away or to get lost. But I needed to do the relationship ladder. So I said, it sounds like you're concerned about this. And the other person goes, yes, that's what I've been trying to tell you. And the tension in the room went from here to here in a second. And I created the safe, waited for the green light gate. There was some trust. And then I said, well, do I understand you now? Have I heard your perspective? Yes. Thank you for finally listening. Then I said, is it okay for me to share it with my perspective now? Yes. Turn around, pull my little dog back, and share my perspective. My perspective is this, and I share my perspective. Here's the rule. If the tension starts getting high again, drop it all and go right back to step one. So they start, yeah, but, it's okay. Put your dog back away, yeah, but, okay. So it sounds like you're concerned about this. Yes. Go right back. And then after it calms back down again, can I start sharing my perspective again? If it gets to a point where this just keeps doing the yeah, but, and they don't want to listen, then I pull out my heavier artillery. It's polite, but I say, you know, I have listened to your perspective, and you said that I've understood your perspective. Wouldn't it be fair now for me to share my perspective? How do you say no to that? I've only had one person really challenge. No, I'm not going to hear. Okay. So we can agree to disagree, end of conversation. But generally speaking, if it gets to that point where they keep arguing, I will just say, look, I've heard you. You know, have I not been understanding your perspective? Yes, you have. Okay. Well, isn't it fair that I get to share mine now and we talk about mine? So it's kind of like Covey's Habit 5, seek first to understand, then be understood, right? First you have to understand, do that part first, then be understood. So there's some assertiveness in all of that. So if you would like to talk with me more about this, stop by the booth, booth 608, and if you wanted to get it in writing, it's in the Passion-Driven Teams book, and I thank you so much for your attention today. Thank you.